a private equity large investment, or also some VC capital. But then this was also an option. So, yeah, as it turned out, Amplify. So I knew th this about a month ago that we were going in this direction, but it was just finalized. So.
Very good. Okay, cool. JD, welcome.
Hello.
How you doing?
Doing well.
Good. So actually both you guys are new. I think this is both of your first call. And so welcome both. Maybe just take a minute to introduce you guys to each other, and then we'll kind of jump in and start chatting about whatever's on your mind. JD, tell us about yourself a little bit.
I am a pharmacist, regional pharmacy manager for independent pharmacy. It's a family-owned pharmacy in central Indiana. I oversee eight retail pharmacies, have 16 pharmacists reporting to me, and then kind of work with their staffs as well. And I report directly to one of the two owners of our company.
Great. And then one little complicating factor is that it's a family business. So one of the potential leaders of the business is currently reporting to JD. And so we'll occasionally hop into some family business related dynamics, which are unique in the world of business.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you, JD. Jeff.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thank you, Shane. And JD, great to meet you. As Shane mentioned, I'm new to the program. It's my first day here joining one of the meetings. I work for a company called Go and Store. We're a London based company in the UK. As I mentioned, our business was acquired by a New York based company just today, came out the announcement, which is kind of exciting from our perspective because now I'm working under a US umbrella as compared to a European umbrella. So that in itself is, to be honest, good news from a legal and just governance and everything else. But in terms of my background, what I do for the company is I lead the sales and marketing operations for North America and Latin America. I do not speak Spanish, a little bit, muy poquito, as they say, but we have teams of people that that do speak that language. But I oversee all of that in that capacity. So.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, glad you could both join. Normally there are others. I'm not sure where they are. Sometimes this happens. People, life gets busy. So others may join later, but if not, we'll gladly work with two of you as long as you guys would like. And again, just for orientation, the agenda for these calls is really yours. So you guys get to decide what we want to talk about. If you don't have anything specific, I'm happy to generate a little bit of content and give you guys some perspective on some various things and maybe some orientation and all that fun stuff. But to start, let's just open it up, and anybody who would like to ask questions and talk, I'm all ears.
I'll defer. I've got a couple, but JD, I'll defer to you. Let you go if you would like.
Okay, a couple of things that I have that are that I wanted to talk about included the, and I talked to you a little bit about it, Shane, in our initial call on that, but still struggling with, as you alluded to, the, I guess, kind of not necessarily heir apparent, but one of the nephews to the current ownership at our pharmacy, and he's managing one of our stores, so I'm in lieu training my future boss, and in other words, of how to work with things, how to interact with our company, and how to run the day-to-day business. And the communication or the lack of communication is still there tremendously on his part. Where we're meeting with him weekly at this point and saying, okay, here's what you need to do, and it's still not getting done. And it's things of the nature of communicating with his employees, with other peers, other pharmacists, other stores, because he is at our central, I guess you could say central pharmacy, to where they fill prescriptions for all of our locations. And so
Is he a pharmacist?
he is, yes.
Okay, so he's a pharmacist and he's managing other pharmacists just like you are. There's kind of layers, and so he's
Yeah.
managing. And how long has he been doing this? How long has he been with the company?
Approximately 2 years.
Okay. How old is he?
26, 27.
26 or 27.
Yeah, he's about 3 years out of school.
Okay, got it. And do you hear reports about him?
I did at one point, and then his staff and other people just kind of went quiet. I have a feeling mostly because of inaction or not seeing a change. And so they're just like, well, that's the way it's going to be. He's got the last name, his name's on the building type of thing. And so that's just the way it's going to be.
Yeah, got it. Yeah, that's pretty typical. Have you talked to his relatives in power? And what is their take?
They're on the same page as I am, that he's got to step up, got to do what we need him to do to continue on in this company. They have fired relatives before, so that's not out of the question. Or we've moved them around. Management might not be the best fit for him, so we'll give him a hourly position or a staff position type of thing. So I know we can get there, and we don't want to cut his legs out from under him and not allow him to learn and get moving. He didn't work a lot while he was going through school. So what he has knowledge wise is pharmacist knowledge from school, which is very little business knowledge or HR knowledge, which is most every specialty when you get into those, except for maybe a business management degree. But
yeah, got it. Okay. So, I mean, he's really green for one. Mm-hmm. So you and I had talked on the call about having a really honest conversation with him. Have you had a chance to do that?
I have. And
how did that go?
It went like every other conversation with him, which is he seems to hear it and really take it to heart. But there's no action on the other side of it.
Okay. So my suggestion then is, if this is persistent, I would get approval from your bosses who are relatives and say, I want to put them on a 90-day PIP. And at the end of 90 days, if he hasn't improved, we'll just reassess his role. Like this is, he's not, and let them know, like, they probably know this, but it's good to have this conversation with them explicitly, which is his last name being on the company name is a huge hit to his credibility, not a help to his credibility. And credibility is the most important currency in leadership. And so in order for him to be successful, we've got to make him credible. Did you have that conversation with him where you talked about his credibility? And
word for word, I was great. Writing that all down, and it had that. I pulled out the book or where I wrote it down in my notes, and I pretty much read it to him. I'm a firm believer in that. Even going with coachings, I prepare my coachings ahead of time, and then I sit there and I'll read the coaching to them, because I've already prepared what I want to read and what I want to tell them to do and how they need to change. So why go away from that? Because I've already prepared it nicely. So
okay, So I think, for example, you'll have to punch in quite a bit more. And I actually think Module 3 might be really helpful for you.
Okay.
Module 3, and particularly, let me find the exact videos here that I recommend you watch. Normally, I should just have this up. I do this every time I have to log into it. It's slow today. All right. Now we're in. I'll just share my screen too so that everybody can see where I'm going. So this is Module 3. Unlock performance blocks, how to grow potential in others. And what I want to draw your attention to specifically is, honestly, a couple of these videos could be quite helpful to you leading up. But if you just want a shortcut, I'm going to have you start with video 7, which is, and video 7 also uses a, there's a download book here called the Arise Performance Model. You can download that. And then really kind of 7, 8, and 9 are really great kind of orientation around how to figure out why the person might not be performing. Because there may be a lot of different reasons. It could just be hard skills. It could be there may be some engagement issues. There's maybe a lot of issues. And so it's well worth, instead of just kind of, now that you've told them a number of times and you haven't gotten the results, the next place to look is beneath the water, you know, beneath the waterline, where you get to ask the question, what's the issue behind the issue? And my suspicion is he just has no awareness and he has no real hard skills. And he's got really limited experience. So he's got some significant things to overcome. So one of the things that'll happen is in video 7, which is really more about you and how you make someone aware, is you want to confirm with him that he understands what is expected of him. It's one thing to tell him what's expected. It's another thing to confirm whether he understands what you requested or suggested. Okay. And those three videos will help you begin to think about how to do that. And so anyway, I would just start there. I mean, I think those are just a couple of things where you can really, and what you may discover is you may have to be a lot more handholding for a period of time where you say, by this day, I need you to have had this conversation. We're going to meet on this day. And we're going to review that conversation. And that might help. And then if it's still not happening, then it's the PIP. Then you go to the bosses and you say, needing 90-day performance plan. And then you let them know. You're just like, hey, this is called a PIP. Here's what a PIP is. Here's what it means. Here are the implications for you. This is why this is happening, because we see repeated behavior and we've tried to support you and get you the help you need. This may not be the role for you. And we want to check to see if it is, and we're going to give you all the support we can for 90 days, and then we're going to reassess your role. But I'm glad you have support from your bosses. That's important. Mm-hmm. Okay, questions, comments about that?
I don't have anything. Thanks for the guidance there, and that will work. We've done PIPs with other people before, and no reason to hold out somebody just because of a last name from a PIP, yeah. Just because. So.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And it, you know, the other thing that's really dangerous that's going on is you've got an information cutoff. So the fact that all the information about how he was doing all went silent isn't good. You know, that's something that you may have to go around and reawaken those mm-hmm. communication channels and just let them know, like, hey, you know, a while ago we heard feedback, you know, and this would be one-off conversations where you think critical stakeholders that you would just say, hey, you gave me feedback a while ago about this leader. I just want to check in. How are things going? The reason I'm asking is because we're making a really concerted effort to see if we can move the needle on this. And I want you to know that you don't have to worry about the last name. You know, this we are taking care of this as we would anybody. And if you have any concerns or questions or any guidance that you want to share with me that I could help him be better, I'd like to hear that. And a couple of those one-off conversations might be useful. It's probably even better if you can alert him that you're going to do that. Just to say, hey, I really want to be helpful to you. And the best way for me to be helpful to you is for me to just check in with a couple of your team members. And, you know, and with your permission, I'm going to do that and get you some really good feedback to make sure we're getting you the best support we can. And that way it's above board all the way around. And then you can even tell the people, I've already told this person, what's the name of this person?
Taylor.
Taylor, so you can say to them, I've already talked to Taylor. I got his permission to talk to you. He knows I'm talking to you, and he welcomes this. You know, so I just think what you've got to do is start waking up the communication channels again. I don't want you flying blind, and it's really common to be flying blind in any organization, but it's especially true if you've got a last name problem.
Great. Thanks.
Yeah. So check into that. Hey, Jeff, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
Jeff is a veteran of the program. We've got two new guys. This is their first day. This is JD and Jeff. JD runs a pharmacy. He's a supervisor for 8 retail pharmacies and a family-owned business. And he's been managing a guy below him who has the last name as the guy above him and will one day be the guy above him. And so that guy is not performing very well, but he's a family member. So we're working through the complexities of that. Jeff runs sales and marketing for North America and Latin America, actually, for an organization. And this is his first day as well. So, and Jeff is a VP at a big HVAC company in the Northeast. And Jeff has 30 years of experience running HVAC companies, and he's been integrated newly into a company that is has no experience with HVAC at the level that he does. So he's doing a lot of training his bosses about the way the business works, among other things. So there you go. There's a little bit of orientation there for all of you.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Oh, we got two Jeffs. Sorry, Jeffrey and Jeff. I don't know why I didn't.
Jeff is good for me.
What do you want? You want what?
No, I was just going to say Jeff is... Jeffrey's, I guess, the formal name, but Jeff is whatever.
All right. I've got Jeff F and Jeff C.
There you go.
I like it.
So Jeff F, what's going on? Welcome to the program. What do you got? What do you want to talk about?
Thank you. I did have one question for JD, just listening to that discussion. Does this gentleman, the younger person, have a sense of entitlement? Do they, maybe I missed that, but do they act like because they have the last name that they have that sense of entitlement?
He doesn't as much as his cousins do. I've had two of his cousins who are, I guess you could say, direct heirs, or their dad is one of the owners. And they have definitely a silver spoon. They're like, I can do whatever I want because my name's on the building. He's not as much there. I had a conversation with him this morning. I was like, we don't want these patients going the wrong direction on these medicines, right? And he's like, no, that makes me feel really sad that I'm harming my patients by not doing this correctly. So he's very humble, very much in there, which does follow his dad's footsteps, who is a retired owner of the company, but just not a current owner.
So. Oh, good. That's actually refreshing to hear that. I thought it was going to be the opposite. Okay, so from my perspective, Shane, we kind of talked about this via email, and I have not had a chance, in full transparency, to review anything that you've sent over. I haven't even gotten into the program yet from an engagement perspective. But, what I've always struggled, I don't want to say I struggled with it, but what I've always tried to learn how to do better, maybe the better way to phrase that, is just managing up, managing down, managing sideways to peers in similar roles in other parts of the world. Just how to do all that. You want to be a friendly person, you want to be liked, but you've got the role that you have, I guess. When I say liked, I mean, our team, our cultural and our own direct team is very friendly with each other, right? But, obviously you have to draw the line with performance and things like that. But at the same time, we do have a culture of trying to have fun and that kind of thing. I try to encourage that because we live a short life and we spend a lot of it at work. So I want people to enjoy that. So some of that dynamic, and then really communicating upward. Sometimes you get the bigger egos, not so much here, but a little bit here, I guess. How do you really say the things that need to be said, but say it in a way that is received well, I guess, maybe the best way to put that.
Great question. So just punch in for me a little bit and let's talk about a really specific instance. And so the more specific you are, the more I can help.
Yeah.
So if you got an individual, tell me about their role, their relationship, all that kind of stuff. So who are you trying to work with?
Yeah. So for the upline, our CEO,
Do you report to the CEO?
I report to the CRO, who reports to the CEO, but I do interact directly quite a bit with the CEO. So, because he kind of oversees us in the Americas as well. And so, it's kind of six of one, half a dozen of the other. But the CEO can make decisions over the CRO, right? So I like having the rapport with him too, because you know he can. Not that Roger, who's my direct boss, will have to defer to Andre, and so he'll be like, just go to Andre with this.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
That kind of thing. So specifically, and again, I think I kind of, I won't say won the battle, but you know, pricing. So we're a new category. We have a new offering in the marketplace. We're a fairly small company, again, just acquired by a much bigger company, but we have, I want to say a point solution, but we'll call it a point solution in a new category. And they, with COVID, they had a great surge of business over 2000 and COVID, 20, right? And because of what we do, it accelerated that business. But it doesn't mean that we're going to grow at that clip forever. It was just kind of a reaction to the marketplace with COVID. What we do is we deliver a human experience, just to kind of bridge the gap, a human experience online for web shopping, basically. So when stores close down, a lot more people are on the internet, and we can do much more with them. So the U.S. is the biggest market and you're going to kill it out there and, go get them. And, everything we did in Europe, you should be able to duplicate 5x in the U.S. Well, first of all, that's really not the case. That's not reality. So we're trying to have a reality check. The reality is we don't have nearly the customer base here. We just have a couple, and we've got to build this whole new thing without any really references here. So that, one of the challenges. But then two, pricing's a bit off. There's a lot of things, and just trying to have that conversation. Now I have been having it, and finally they said to me, Jeff, you do whatever you think you got to do. Just get it approved before you do it. But we're on board with you. We know that, we hired you because we think you know what you're doing. So we're going to let you go ahead and do what you think we need to do. Just get it approved before you sign any final contracts. So to me, that's a bit of a win, because they're saying, okay, go do what you got to do.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was my struggle, was I wasn't getting that initially. I was getting more of the, no, we know everything. We're in Europe. We know everything about the U.S. even though we're in Europe, when they really didn't.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So it sounds like you actually got what you need. I mean, I'm happy to work with you, but it sounds like you were really successful.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
So, yeah. But I can give you kind of some general rules of thumb, if that's useful, but
that'd be great.
You're really effective. Okay. Sorry. This is going to be a repeat for Jeff. Jeff's heard this lecture a couple of times, the other Jeff. So here's the first thing that you can do to boost your credibility to be heard by the people above you. The first thing you do is you divest yourself of the outcomes.
Okay.
What I mean by that is you decide not to have a horse in the race emotionally. And that doesn't mean you don't have a recommendation or you don't have an opinion. It means that you don't really care which way they go. Even though initially you're like, this is a huge mistake, it's the worst thing you can do, please don't do it. You instead frame it. What happens, just so you know, in general, when somebody hires other people to do work for them, there, for some reason, there's a filter that gets installed where there's always a little bit of suspicion about the guidance they're giving. They're not quite sure who to listen to, what data is accurate, whether the person's just saying it because they don't feel like it, or they just don't like change, or they're just too lazy and they're not working hard enough, or they don't quite know whether to listen to the frontline data or actually act on the frontline data. And so you're in that role now. So anything you say that's resistant to what they think could be heard through the lens of, is this person up to something else? And often the harder you argue for something, the more they are suspicious of you. And so the simple way that I talk about it is I go, okay, you present emotionally and energetically as really detached and willing and able to do anything they require.
Okay.
So you're like, whichever way you want to go, we're going to be able to execute. What I want you to be aware of is the cost and consequence of each choice, because there is no choice without a cost. And so I'm going to tell you what the costs are of the various choices. And so, even if someone's like, well, I want us to fire everybody. You're like, okay, we can fire everybody, no problem. So here's what'll happen. And so you start with, yeah, sounds good. I like that idea. Let me tell you what's about to happen. And then you just walk through all the dominoes neutrally, Like, and then that's going to happen. And then we'll do this. And then we'll just take care of that. And the way we deal with that is we just do this. And then we just close down the office, and that's no big deal. And then we just, you know, we begin to kind of, we'll forecast revenues differently. We're going to downgrade our revenue by about 50%. And even though it sounds absurd, you just do it honestly. You do it like really authentically. You're like, this is how that, the choices you're planning to make.
Yeah.
And you say, if that sounds good to you, let me know and I'll go ahead and execute it. My recommendation is we don't fire everybody. My recommendation is we do this instead. Now, there are some costs with that, too. Let me tell you what some of the costs are. It's going to cost you some more money in the near term. You're going to have to absorb that. We're going to have to do this. We're going to have to do that. But here's what we get. Here's the game. And so I'll do whichever one you think, but my recommendation is to go this way. So you can hear the kind of qualitative difference between feeling like you're making a mistake. Instead of that feeling, you go, you're not making a mistake. You're the one empowered to make these decisions. And you're the one who has the vantage point. So I'm going to let you make those calls. But let me make sure you're clear. If I were in your shoes, I'd want to know this information.
Okay. Yeah.
And that, by the way, is another phrase that I encourage you to use. All of us, actually, whenever you're about to have a conversation where you're giving information that they don't want, you actually state literally, if I were in your shoes, I would want the information that I'm about to share with you. And that's why I'm going to share it with you.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Thank you.
Derek, welcome.
Hello, sir.
How are you doing?
Pretty good. A little bit of a late start this morning, but otherwise good. Trying to keep my head above water.
Awesome. Okay. We got a couple new guys, JD and Jeff Feldman, have joined us. So we've just been working with them. And I'm going to go to Jeff C. next. Jeff, how you doing? I think you're muted.
Sorry about that. I was muted. I didn't realize. I forgot.
All right.
Doing fine. Do you want me to put anything out there? Or just?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Pop in.
Just a quick check-in. Everything is, you know, progressing along okay. Last time we left off, I did put a message out to my boss that said, you know, I've done a lot of evaluation of talent. I feel like the jury's not out on this particular individual at this point. But then we ended up talking yesterday, just an impromptu conversation about a potential new hire coming into my area who would be at a management level. And he was mentioning that, you know, it's absolutely critical for us to make sure that this person is comfortable with accountability, making sure people are accountable. And he felt like that was the, you know, the thing that the other manager that we were talking about was lacking. Mm-hmm. So we're actually going to try to split the role up into two different people. The interview, two different people to do their role in two different areas. So geographically, one person would be about 2 hours away from the other. Anyway, I did an interview with a new person that he presented to me, actually. I don't know where he found this individual, but I did the interview with him. And I did check on his how comfortable he would be with accountability. Not very comfortable, you know.
That's not good. That's so funny that someone would say that.
Yeah. And so I, you know, and you know, he probably didn't even know that anyway. He just surfaced this person, you know, on paper, certainly worth the interview. I would bring him on board potentially. But I did want to share with him that he was not going to be another candidate that we would bring on board that would be real strong on accountability. And it seems to be a thing in the trades. Most of these guys who came into the trades can relate to what it's like out in the field.
Yeah.
And all the things. And they don't want to be that guy that, you know, is holding people overly accountable for things that they're not aware of. They're just, you know, a little gun shy in that area. So I pointed that out to him. We ended up getting into a long conversation about accountability and, you know, all these different things. So we have a little bit different philosophy. You said that, you know, expectations are a series of conversations with misunderstandings. There was misunderstandings throughout the whole conversation. You know, it was kind of interesting. I did have to point out to him at one point, he said, no, Jeff, it's not that bad. I mean, you act like the processes are all broken. It's going to take forever to fix it. And I said, oh, well, if I came across that way, I don't think I actually said those words, though, right? I said, I didn't say that. I think you might be hearing that because I'm talking about how I'm more process-oriented potentially than you know, a builder of processes, and you're more like a getter done type person. If you just get the person in the seat and hold them accountable for getting it done, that's 90% of what you need. And I'm more like, maybe that's 70% of what you need, 60%. You need some damn good processes to help them out. So I think we were talking past each other because I think he was afraid to concede or not hearing enough from me that I thought accountability was important.
Yeah. This is your boss. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, when you're talking to your boss, I think a lot of yes and is going to be helpful to you.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of using language that postures you across the table, use language that puts you on the same side of the table and helps him see something in addition. So you want to validate his position and then expand it. And just from a language standpoint, that can be really helpful. So if you're just saying like, we're totally aligned on accountability, something that I value and care a lot about. I'm a big fan of getting things done. I really join you in that. There are some things that I'd like your support in bringing to the organization. Do you think you'd be up for a conversation about how processes could supercharge the things you care about?
Mm.
So you notice there what I did is I, first of all, totally validated what he cared about.
Right.
So no longer in an argument.
Right.
Second thing I did is I indicated, I requested his help. So I said, would you be up to help me use processes to supercharge the thing we already agree about? So now what I'm doing is I'm further linking what I want to what he wants.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I'm always trying to process in the moment, and that's part of it. These conversations happen so, you know, in the middle of everything else that I never have time, you know, to get prepared. I'm always flat-footed.
It's totally fine. You didn't do anything wrong. I'm just giving you a suggestion for next time. Like we talked about, series of conversations, right? You get a chance to do it over again. It's no big deal. It's a series of conversations marked by misunderstanding is how we get aligned. What I'm giving you is a way to have a conversation that's going to allow him to drop his defenses a little bit. And the way you do that is you just hand over the keys. You're like, hey, I'm with you. I agree with all that. And I'd like to make that even bigger. I'd like to make that even better. And here's one way I know how to do that. I've done this before. Processes. Let's install some really good processes. And I've got an idea on how to do that. And it's going to take some time, but I need your support. I need you to help sponsor that. Is that something you'd be up for?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think,
how did you actually word that? You said, you know, supercharge the processes to what?
Yeah. What I would like to do is install processes to supercharge the very accountability you're after. What you want is to get a lot done, and you want people to be accountable for what they're getting done. My experience is that if I could install some processes, I could supercharge the very thing that you most want.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's how I would frame that.
It sounds so easy. You know,
when I'm not in the conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just after fact, I'm listening to it. And I'm like, why didn't I say that? I mean, I know better.
But this is normal. This is true for all of us, including me, you know, and this is what I do for a living. Right. And I still, there are times I'll have a conversation and go, oh, you know what? I came at that much harder than I needed to. And I was cold, or I didn't understand that, or I wasn't listening, or that's normal. It's just human. So what you're doing is fine. I'm just giving you like, If you want to take another pass at it, this is the way to get there.
Yeah. And so anyway, what it does, I do believe that, well, what I did point out, I do believe is accurate, that he definitely is more of a getter done, grunted out, you know, minimum viability, you know, the MVP, minimum viable product. Like if it's good, it's okay. If people have to work a little harder at it, that's okay. We're not looking for you know, supercharged systems. Yeah. And I am naturally built different. You know, I don't like to see people working harder and communication going in circles. If I could, you know, build a better mousetrap, I would.
So here I'll just push a little bit on what you said there. You're saying you got a narrative in your head, which is I'm built a little different. Maybe, or you could say I'm aligned with him and I see a way to make it even better and to expand it. And so the more you put yourself as I'm different from you, the more you tell yourself that, the more you'll show up in conversations across the table. And the more you show up across the table, the more he starts to go, I got to deal with this guy again.
Yeah.
And you don't want a boss ever feeling like, oh, I gotta have this conversation again, where we're just going to go in circles around what's more important. You know, a very helpful module for you might be module 5, particularly the videos on polarities. And I'm just going to call that up so this is one of the most powerful ways that I've ever seen to get through gridlock and impasse.
Yep.
And so if you go to module, I'll just go back to the modules. So when people tend to talk in circles or have the same conversations or the same debates over and over, very often it's a direct result of people not understanding they're dealing with a polarity, not a problem.
Right.
And a problem is something that has a clear beginning and an end and a solution. And a polarity is something that has two interdependent opposites that need each other to function. So a core polarity of existence is breathing. You have to breathe in and out. Both depends on the other. They are opposites. You often can't do both at the same time. Rest and exercise is a fundamental polarity. In organizations, there are very common polarities. I wrote a book about it called The 7 Management Polarities, which you can get. It's on my website, or you can go to Amazon. And there's a quiz, like the 5 Leadership Languages quiz. There's a quiz about what polarities you find that you may be at odds with and how to manage those polarities. You can never solve a polarity. You can only manage them. And when you're able to identify them, you actually frame conversations in a different way. And so if you go to video 10 of module 5 is where I introduce polarities. Mm-hmm. And so video 10, video 11, and video 12, where I give you like the 10 most common polarities. That is where you really start to feel some clarity, and you can start to map out what's going on in this relationship or in this business decision that we're trying to make. And so really common polarities in organizational life is, should we be short-term or long-term? Should we be detail-oriented or strategic? Should we be hierarchical or frontline responsive? Should we be innovative or standardizing? Those are all polarities. The answer is yes to all of them at all times, but you can't do all of them always. So you have to know that there are seasons and rhythms in organization and management where certain things have to happen for a period of time so that other things can happen. And so you don't experience the negative side of either. And so polarity management is one of the most distinctive things that I do when I coach people who are dealing with high levels of complexity. Understanding the difference between polarities and problems can be immensely helpful.
Yeah. And then the part about sitting on, you know, making sure that I'm never putting us, we're trying not to ever put us on the opposite side of it. Yeah. It's just a habit. It's the way I think, you know. People will say sometimes I'm not overly trying to think sometimes about what I say, you know, and.
Sure. Yeah. You shoot from the hip a little bit. You have a style that is a little bit combative, but you're not a combative person.
Right.
Your just verbal style is a little bit jousty. And right. So that's why I'm just making some suggestions for you in general about like how you relate to any of your coworkers or people is a little bit of a, you're like that, I'm like this, you do that, I do this. And instead you could just be like, hey, we're together on this. I'm on the same side of the table. I'm going to help you look at a part of the table that we maybe weren't looking at before.
Gotcha. No, that's really good. I like that. I'm going to have to work on that. It'll be something nice. Get some practice into it. And I taking it overly serious, but I'm going to be, you know, I can adjust a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I think that's good. It's good for you to play with it. Just keep playing with language patterns. And, you know, there's the module on, it's in Heart Conversations. Now I'm not remembering the video, but it's called Switches. I know you watched module 2 about Heart Conversations. Yeah. There should be a video in there about switches, meaning verbal cues that you just memorize. So the most a really common thing leaders say a lot is, I completely disagree. And that actually creates all kinds of weird emotional wake and ripple effects. And it's the butterfly wings that creates a tsunami. And I've seen it repeatedly. All that leaders have to do is memorize an alternative phrase. And that phrase, one example is, I think about that differently. Tell me more. You know, it means the same thing. Right. But one builds a bridge, the other creates a wall. And what you do with that little verbal switch, it's 3 seconds. You literally save 10 hours of like misunderstanding and frustration and hurt feelings and emotional wake. And yep. So that's the power of language to bring about different outcomes.
That's powerful stuff.
Yes. So you might just go back to the switches. I have a cheat sheet with the 10 most common phrases leaders use that I recommend they use different phrases instead. So that's module 2.
I probably use all 10, Shane.
we all have a tendency to. I wrote them and I still do it sometimes.
That's funny. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. You bet. Yeah. Derek, let's jump over to you. Derek, how you doing? You want to check in? You want to share anything? Questions, comments? Anything you're working through?
Working through a ton of stuff. Most of it is, I think, pretty contextual with a lot of development work we have going on. We've got a big expo that we're shipping out to. So there's just a ton of little details that I'm trying to track. But at the same time, we're moving offices and need to take this prototype that we designed and basically productize it, which I'm even frustrated to say, because this prototype should have been the productized version, but because of probably poor organizational design, but also the interdisciplinary nature of the product we're building, there were just a lot of design decisions that got made kind of collectively. And that's something that I'm struggling with, is just how to centralize ownership of some of those things, but it's this trade-off between like accountability, I guess, and power, like, or at least maybe domain knowledge. So it's like, I want to centralize accountability for the design, but there's not a single person who knows enough to do it. So my kind of, what I've done is I've at least winnowed it down to like a small group of people. And I've told my VP of engineering that, like, I want no more than 3 people kind of in the whatever group consortium designing this. And I want one of them to own, you know, the hardware guy to own the physical blueprints. And that's like where the rubber meets the road. And so in some sense, he's got the default asterisk by his name, but, anyway, I'm in the middle of setting that up. It's a little bit of a new process for us, and it will. I'm doing something that I'm a little bit nervous about, but there's a guy in our organization. So our VP of engineering has a engineering lead who reports to him, who is incredibly process oriented, and he is the number one person that I get complaints about as I kind of loop, because I do a lot of looping around to people and catching up one on one with just entry-level engineers, because, you know, I'm employee number one and I know everyone as they came in, and I've got like I know where all the bodies are buried. I've got relationships with everyone. So my VP of engineering, he kind of likes it and dislikes it. He likes it because he can just rely on me to kind of get the scuttlebutt and then come back to him. But at the same time, I feel like I've always got like a little bit more than he does. And so he's always scrambling to catch up. Anyway, in this case, as we've built this prototype, you know, just people from every one of 5 groups at one point or another have complained that they wanted to make a small change, but there's this engineering manager who's incredibly process oriented, and his response would essentially be, oh, you know, fill out some paperwork, you know, fill out a JIRA ticket, no matter whether it's big or small. And from my perspective, I think I know, and actually partially it's because of some of your modules, like the polarities thing. I think this guy is just, we got to be organized and stick to a plan. And there's the, we got to break everything because everything's wrong polarity. And this guy's a little bit more on the other side. And I realized that relatively early on. And so whenever literally every single person who complains is a bit more on the other side. And so I kind of point out to them, I'm like, well, you know, if every one of 20 people tells him to make a small change, even if he wants to make them all, he's going to lose track of them. So it's not unreasonable for him to ask you to make a ticket. And by the way, did you make a ticket? And the guy's like, no. And I'm like, well, how long would it have taken you to make a ticket? And he's like, I don't know, 2 minutes. I was like, okay, so you're complaining to me about a problem that would have taken you 2 minutes to make a ticket for. It's like, I mean, you know, I can see it from his perspective, you know? And the guy's like, yeah. So anyway, I get back to this, you know, but there's still this complaint across the organization. And so we do need to move fast on this next version, but actually the thing I appreciate is we hit our deadline. Like I can't say I was happy with the speed, but we put a lot of complex stuff together. And so I'm thinking about putting that engineering manager on this kind of small committee of three people. And it's more of like an instinctive thing. Like my only worry is that I'm doing it to isolate, to get him off of some of the other stuff and onto this. But like I said, that's all very contextual. Like, I'm not sure what the problem is right now. I've basically told my VP of engineering, he's like, interesting. And so yeah, we've got a plan to,
you don't have a problem. You have a polarity.
Yeah.
And that's really important. Do you know what the polarities are?
I mean, I don't think I have an exhaustive list. I watched that module, but it was like really quick. I think I could spend half of my day going through this stuff.
Sure, I know. I understand. Look, man, because of the complexity that you have, polarity work is going to be a lot of what you have to do. Organizational design and accountabilities are directly connected to managing a polarity. And there is no way, again, you'll never solve it. You'll never get it done. And you never really get it wrong either. You're either out of balance or you're in balance. And sometimes you're out of balance deliberately. And that's okay. Like, you might have started with a very specific awareness that one half of the polarity, in order to get a robot working and repeating a complex task that also has some variability in it, requires specificity of expertise. So you've got little buckets of like, I'm a software guy, I know software, and I'm a hardware guy, I know hardware, and I'm a robotics guy, and I know robotics, and I'm an AI guy, and I know AI. None of them know any of the other stuff, but they all have to work together, right? So that's a polarity. That's a built-in polarity, which is you have coherence on one side, which is everybody has to work like a hand. And then you have, we need individual fingers to work. So like, this is what you're trying to manage all the time, but you don't have a central brain doing it, right? Mm-hmm. And so that is a built-in polarity that you will always have, that you'll never fix because it ain't broken. But you will have to learn how to stitch the two together. And the way you'll do that is through little experiments. And so for you to kind of de-escalate the intensity around like, I've got to get that, or that's not, you know, yeah, man, of course. Welcome to the complexity of the job you have, which is you're on an infinity loop now. And the goal of the infinity loop is to you try to recognize red flags. Like, what are early warning signs that you're out of balance in the polarity? Well, one of the early warning signs you've just identified, which is like, I didn't get the thing that I knew I wanted. And I can't remember what you had said. There was a specific word what was the word you used that wasn't working?
So our prototype it doesn't have all of the features we need to go literally install it. So we're going to an expo and we're going to show off this prototype, but there are simple physical things about the design which weren't optimized. So we couldn't literally take that and stick it into a customer's facility because there's something just off about it. Like, when it's 2 feet too tall, for instance, and everyone's like, how did, it's unnecessarily tall.
Right.
Why is it so tall?
Right. So that is exactly what you have, is that's coherence or big picture. And then you have the individual fingers, right? Each finger that knows how to do what it has to do. And so all you did is you just recognized that you have taken one side of the polarity, which is, I need highly specialized focus areas to execute extremely complex, really difficult tasks. And I basically have to get those done. And that's where the focus is. And so I'm going to empower all the people to get those things done. And in the process, I lost the big picture, the vision, the holistic understanding of what the point of the entire gestalt is. And so anyway, that's kind of the big, that's the thing for you to be aware of, is I think you have kind of a gestalt polarity there, like how the sum of the parts is bigger than the parts itself. And so what you're exploring is structures that support one half of the polarity or the other half. And so, for example, a manager who maybe doesn't have expertise in all these things, but has visionary oversight over the fundamental human purpose of this thing that you're doing, the why, they hold the why, And everyone is accountable to this person, even if they don't have the expertise. They know here are the boundary conditions that you've got to begin to work with them. And so, so anyway, just some thoughts there. So you've decided on a small team of three to occupy that kind of managerial role, which in my mind is a really good experiment. But I want you to be aware of the way that dial can be moved on the continuum. And I want you to be thinking of it as an experiment. And I want you to be presenting it as an experiment. This is important because when you present it as an experiment, you flag for everybody in the room, this is not your new life, hence to forth.